culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where the most unlikely public battle continues to unfold and continues to claim all sorts of casualties. Casualties to human beings, well, maybe, but also casualties to truth and to sanity and to civility. The debate, the unlikely debate about whether vaccines are a good idea, whether you should, whoever is listening out there, consider actually getting yourself and your family vaccinated. It's free, it's easy. Why is this an item to debate? Well, it may become less of an item to debate if people take to heart a very persuasive, to me at least, piece in the New York Times, which we talked about a little bit yesterday. The piece is co-authored by Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, and the headline for it is, "Don't want a vaccine? Be prepared to pay more for insurance." Dr. Rosenthal worked as an emergency room physician before becoming a journalist, a New York Times correspondent. She is now the editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Dr. Rosenthal, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me to talk about this.
And your new book is An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. It's just available in paperback now. Okay, Dr. Rosenthal, what do you say to people who say it would be terribly unfair to punish people with higher insurance rates if they don't want to get vaccinated?
Well, I think, you know, we've tried all the what I would call the sane arguments, you know, or the normal arguments. It's good for health. It's good for your family. Protect your community. And they really haven't moved the needle much. But I think, you know, it's really not unfair because people who don't get vaccinated, A, they're driving up health care costs for themselves in a huge way, and they should be really afraid of those COVID hospital bills if they get sick. But they're also driving up health care costs for all of us, because ultimately those totally unnecessary hospitalizations for COVID, which often run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, even for relatively short stays, end up rising premiums for all of us and putting all of us at a health risk. So, you know, to me, it's not analogous to people who say, well, you know, we pay for health care for people who are obese or who smoke too much to get, what if they get lung cancer? But this is, we're talking about here a free, easy jab that the government paid for that we know is safe and effective. And if you don't care about your own wallet and the cost you're going to incur getting COVID, care about everyone else. If you don't care about health, care about the finances.
Generally, it's a kind of an established principle, isn't it, that you pay more for insurance premiums if you have a higher risk? We do believe in that, don't we?
Well, in life insurance, we do. In car insurance, we do. If you've had a lot of accidents, for example, you know, your car insurance rate go up. If you smoked, your life insurance rates go up. In healthcare, we've kind of taken a more humanitarian position generally, because, you know, things like smoking and drinking too much, you know, we consider them diseases, which they are in a way, and they're very hard to treat. It's hard to lose weight. But choosing not to get a vaccine is not hard. It's not hard to get a vaccine anymore. You know, you can go into any CVS. They have them at bus stops. Your doctor has them. So that is a choice that I think people should be penalized for, in the sense of it puts not just themselves, but everyone else at risk, both in terms of health and in terms of how much we pay for health care, which is already through the roof in this country.
Okay, speaking of health care being through the roof in this country, I understand that about half the total population has some form of government health insurance, either through Medicare, which of course involves people who are older, or Medicaid, which involves people who are in need, financial need. Would there be impact, or should there be impact, to the unvaccinated who, on this COVID issue, who are Medicaid or Medicare recipients?
Well, Medicare does involve significant co-payments for patients, so if you're hospitalized. So Medicare patients who get COVID will end up paying out of pocket quite a large amount of money. This, you know, in the thousands, if not ten thousands of dollars. So that should scare them. You know, there is a principle in government insurance that we want everyone to pay the same rate. The Affordable Care Act does make exceptions for what we call small group plans, insurance plans that cover companies with under 50 people. So if you're a smoker in one of those plans, an insurer can charge you 50% more. And that's because if you're a smoker in a small company of 50 people, a disease you get will massively impact their insurance, the whole company's insurance rates for the next year. So, you know, the federal insurance policies, government insurance policies, have been very forgiving of, you know, people's habits and people's decisions. But a vaccine is something we all paid for with our tax dollars. It was developed by the Trump administration, which is why in some ways it's a little bit ironic that the big vaccine refuse snakes, as we sometimes call them, are generally in the red states and in Trump districts. Because, you know, the president you loved made these vaccines happen. And they are good vaccines.
And he endorses them. I wish he would endorse them more vigorously than he does. Go ahead.
No, I said, and now that we're seeing, you know, really hospitals overwhelmed in some of the southern and midwestern states, you know, we are seeing some of the governors and senators who previously were quiet on the issue come out and say, it is time to get vaccinated. You must get vaccinated. But, you know, once you've gotten and absorbed and that message of don't get a vaccine is so hardened now that seems to be hard to overcome. Maybe until your partner gets really sick or your kid gets really sick. But, boy, it's really shocking that it's taken so much to convince people to do something that's so smart, both from a health point of view and a financial point of view.
This came in from Thousand Oaks, California. We got an email when I was talking about your article yesterday. And it's from John, and he writes, I can't believe what I'm hearing. Mr. Medved agrees the healthy unvaccinated should pay more insurance premiums for being healthy and unvaccinated. And this is evidence that the vaccines are safe. We are losing our freedoms, and Mr. Medved doesn't seem to care. Dr. Rosenthal, response?
Well, you know, freedom is not endless. You know, I don't have the freedom to these days, right, not wear a seatbelt if it puts other people at risk. I don't have freedom to do dangerous things. And not getting vaccinated puts the rest of us at risk. And I hear this over and over again. Oh, I'm healthy. I don't need a vaccine. One thing has nothing to do with the other. I'm healthy. I got vaccinated. Healthy people get COVID just the way healthy people get colds and pneumonia and the flu. And it's just a kind of non sequitur to say, well, I'm healthy. I go to the gym every day. So therefore, I don't need a vaccine.
Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, her new book is called An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How You Can Take It Back. Available now in paperback. Appreciate your joining us on the show. We'll be right back. Now, of course, there is a great deal of focus on the embarrassment as Andrew Cuomo tries to figure out what he's going to do in response to the fact that the Speaker of the State Assembly, there are 86 Democrats in the state of New York who have indicated they want him either resigned or impeached. They want him gone. And of course they're right. I mean, how can Andrew Cuomo continue as governor given some of the exceedingly creepy details that were released in that investigation that concluded that he was guilty of all kinds of terrible things? But he is not the only Democratic office holder at the moment who is incurring some serious embarrassment. There's the new mayor of Boston, Mayor Kim Janey. She became mayor because of her position with the city council when the incumbent mayor, Marty Walsh, took a job in the Biden administration. And as Secretary of Labor, as a matter of fact. And today, of course, the head of the biggest labor organization, the AFL-CIO, Richard Trumka, died unexpectedly, suddenly, at age 72. I'm not sure there's any breaking news about that, but we'll let you know when there is. In any event, there's certainly breaking news about Mayor Janey. She doesn't like the idea of vaccine passports. There are lots and lots of Americans who don't like that idea, the idea that is going to be put into practice in New York City by the outgoing mayor, Bill de Blasio. But here is what WCVB in Boston reported about Mayor Janey's controversial response. Listen.
Controversial comments from Boston Mayor Kim Janey after I asked her about New York City requiring proof of vaccination for restaurants, gyms, and entertainment venues.
There's a long history in this country of people needing to show their papers.
The mayor then references slavery, former President Trump, and birtherism.
During slavery, post-slavery, as recent as, you know, what an immigrant population has to go through here. We heard Trump with the birth certificate nonsense. Here, we want to make sure that we are not doing anything that would further create a barrier for residents.
Okay, does anyone even understand what she means about referencing birtherism, referencing Barack Obama being asked to show his birth certificate, which, of course, was always insane? But what does that have to do with vaccine passports? I mean, the purpose of trying to get Obama to show his birth certificate was to score some points against him politically, to emphasize the idea that even though he was born in Hawaii, there was foreign background. His father had been from Kenya. His mother had been, of course, from born in Kansas and raised in Washington State. But in any event, the idea that somehow this is related to slavery, I mean, the whole idea of slavery and part of what made slavery so horrible was you couldn't be free even if you had papers. In other words, if you saw the movie 12 Years a Slave, which is based on a true story, that was actually part of the real horror of slavery, was the idea that people could be living as free people in the North, having gotten away from the South, and then be kidnapped or dragged back, sometimes illegally, sometimes legally, and forced back into slavery or into slavery for the first time when they were taken down to the South, based not on a lack of papers, but based on your skin color. I mean, well, the one thing that people on the left are usually very sensitive about is invoking slavery inappropriately as an analogy, or invoking the Holocaust inappropriately as an analogy. It's appropriate to be a little bit careful on something that is that big and that awful. And so why doesn't Kim Janey get major pushback from the left on this? Because she is a candidate of the left, and she made a comment like that, and I think took a position like she did, in the midst of a re-election campaign that she is going through. But honest to goodness, the idea that vaccine passports are reminiscent of slavery, really. There's actually was some good news today. I mean, it's really pretty remarkable that it hasn't gotten some more attention. But it's good news on an issue that every American is concerned about, I think, or should be. This from a White House COVID coordinator. His name is Jeff Zients, and he spoke today in the White House press briefing. This is clip six.
Over the past 24 hours, we've recorded 864,000 vaccinations, the highest in a day since July 3rd. And importantly, 585,000 first shots. That's the highest since July 1st. For the fourth week in a row, we've increased the daily average number of Americans newly vaccinated. And importantly, we're seeing the most significant increases in states with the highest case rates.
Okay, that's very good news. And it means that people on the conservative side of things, people on the left side of things, who are talking about the value of actually getting vaccinated, have been getting through and making a difference. And by the way, response to Mayor Janey in Boston, there was a city council member named Andrea Campbell who tweeted, when we are combining a deadly virus and vaccine hesitancy in some communities, this kind of rhetoric is dangerous, concerning what Mayor Janey said. Showing proof of vaccination is not slavery or birtherism. We are too close to give ground to COVID. Science is science. It's pretty simple. Vax up and mask up. So the mayor's response to give her a chance, she said, earlier today I pointed out several hurdles facing communities of color with lower vaccination rates. These hurdles should not be excuses, but we must consider our shared history as we work to ensure an equitable public health and economic recovery. Does anyone have any idea what she means, what she's talking about here? And again, no apology. She also said, what I said was there's a long history of asking people to show their papers. What our focus here in Boston is in making sure that everyone has access to the vaccine, making sure that we are doing everything to vaccinate our workforce in the city of Boston, making sure that our residents have access to the vaccine. A little bit repetitive, but unexceptionable sentiments, one could say. What about the idea? Why would it be that Democrats would be more likely to lose friendships over COVID issues than Republicans? That, according to a disturbing new poll. We will get to that and more coming up on the MedVed Show. Michael Medved Show, I mentioned these new polls that show that significant numbers of Americans have ended friendships over disagreements about COVID-19. There was a survey released today. It's from YouGov, and they asked the following question to respondents. Have you lost any friendships because of differences in opinion related to the COVID-19 pandemic? By the way, if you had, you want to describe that process and how that happened, you can give us a call, 1-800-955-1776. The Democrats were significantly more likely than Republicans to have lost a friend due to disagreements about COVID, with 24% responding yes versus just 15% of GOP voters who said the same thing. Okay, so why would it be when you have so many Republicans who, at least according to other polling, feel very strongly and are very much opposed to getting vaccines and say they never will. Why would it be the Democrats would be so much more likely to lose friends over COVID-19? I think I know the answer. which is something that they don't mention in covering these polls. The answer, it seems to me, is that part of the essential characteristics of friendship, seeing your friends occasionally. That's why I think generally the COVID-19 pandemic and all of the restrictions and all of the cautions have been hard on friendship generally. They've been hard on relationships, and including relationships, but they're not because you don't spend enough time together, but maybe there is such a thing as spending too much or too much time under pressure. In any event, the point about this is that if you are a Democrat, you are far more likely to feel strongly about getting the vaccine. You are far more likely to feel that masking, for instance, is sometimes appropriate. And when it comes to the issue of friendships, you're much less likely, if you're a Republican, to say, I'm going to stop seeing people because I don't know if they are completely safe or they're completely with the program. In other words, Republicans have a more laissez-faire attitude, not just to economics, but to some extent to precautions about the pandemic. Democrats are more concerned and much more likely to say, well, I'm very sorry, love to see you, but for your unvaccinated family, maybe we'll have to make some special arrangements to meet outside or something of that nature. And that could explain this disproportionate number of Democrats who say they have actually lost friends from arguments about the COVID pandemic. The acrimony around COVID figures, says the report from Mediaite, the acrimony around COVID figures to get worse before it gets better as public health officials have increasingly laid the spread and worsening of the pandemic at the feet of those who refuse to be vaccinated and warn that unvaccinated people could allow the disease to mutate into something even more harmful than the Delta variant. This, however, is becoming, it seems to me, a less partisan issue. And that's a good thing. For instance, 2 days ago, Jen Psaki had this to say about Republican governors and their handling of the pandemic. This is clip three.
Florida is not the only state. Seven states have both a statewide ban on mask mandates and a prohibition on school districts from requiring masks in schools. And some states have even banned businesses and universities from requiring workers and students to be vaccinated. In fact, the most extreme of these measures is in Texas, where you can be fined. A professor or teacher can be fined if they ask a student if they are vaccinated or if they ask unvaccinated students to wear masks. And I think the fundamental question we have is, what are we doing here? And the president, you'll hear the president talk a little bit about this later this afternoon. His message is going to be, we're all in this fight together, whether it's Democratic or Republican governor. And I will note, most Republican governors are doing exactly the right thing and advocating for and taking steps to advocate for more people to get vaccinated. But if you aren't going to help, if you aren't going to abide by public health guidance, then get out of the way and let people do the right thing to lead in their communities, whether they are teachers, university leaders, private sector leaders, or others who are trying to save lives.
Okay, but again, talking in that way and starting out by criticizing the actions of state legislatures, the actions to try to take some local control over local life, is not a way to bring people together. And frankly, it's one of those things where bringing people together over this issue is likely to yield more positive results in terms of the vaccination rate, like the results we saw today, with the rate of vaccinations the highest it's been in a full month, which is a good thing. There's another poll that says that a clear majority, this is a Yahoo News YouGov poll, a clear majority of Americans once again say they approve of masking in public amid a surge in COVID-19 hospitalizations across the U.S. And then there's this. Same poll shows most Americans would rather take a pay cut than go back to the office. Now, I don't think that's because they're afraid of the virus at the office, but there are reasons that there are many Americans who would seem to like working at home. One of them might be to find something that's missing. And there is this. There's a problem at the State Department with a missing whiskey bottle. And it's not an ordinary whiskey bottle. It's a $5,800 bottle of whiskey that was given to Secretary of State Pompeo as a gift. Now, what's supposed to happen with this when he leaves the State Department is, assuming that he hasn't drunk it, and he says he hasn't, he would remember such a thing. I don't think Mike Pompeo is in the habit of getting $5,800 bottles of whiskey. This was a gift from the government of Japan. So the way it's supposed to work is the Secretary of State either pays for it at the end of his service, and then he can keep it, or he gives it back to the government, the collection at the State Department, where they collect these various foreign gifts that are one of the traditions of the Foreign Service. There's all kinds of different gifts that that Mike Pompeo accounted for and gave back to the government, some that he kept. But is this going to be Whiskeygate for Secretary Pompeo, who was a serious and viable presidential possibility for 2024? I kind of doubt it, but it does raise an interesting question here. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a $5,800 bottle of aged and apparently very prime Japanese whiskey. I mean, I assume this is not one of those giant gallon-sized bottles. It's a regular whiskey bottle. But the idea of people paying, whether they're government servants or not, paying that kind of money for a few shots of whiskey, that really does say we live in a land of choice and promise, I guess. Speaking of choice, there's a big new movie, much anticipated, called The Suicide Squad, that is being released tonight. And there's also playing in theaters around the country Matt Damon's controversial new film, Stillwater. We'll review them both coming up on The Medved Show. Increasingly, I think, tired of the ongoing battle against a virus. What about a battle against, a gigantic 200-foot-tall starfish? We will get to that in just a moment. I do want to mention, because this is the last chance to do so, that we have a special introductory discount going on to become a MedHead Plus member. And this is a great opportunity for people who have ever thought about wanting to have a subscription to this show, where for MedHead Plus, and this includes free access to everything in our history store, to sets of history programs, for instance, our Revolution set or the whole history library. Regularly, that costs about $1,000. And here, for $80 with this introductory rate, $79.99, if you go to michaelmedved.com, you have access to the entire MedVed history store, plus a daily subscription to the radio show, which allows you to listen anytime you want, anywhere you want, streaming-wise, at the cost of less than 22 cents a day. great opportunity. And unfortunately, that opportunity at this very, very much discounted price will go away on Monday. So take advantage over tomorrow and the weekend of that opportunity. And that brings us to the opportunity that some people have to see a much anticipated film, Suicide Squad. Actually, The Suicide Squad from Hollywood. Okay, the reason I made such a point of saying the accurate title of this film is The Suicide Squad, as you may remember, there was another film called Just Suicide Squad that came out 5 years ago. It was something of a flop. It did not get great reviews. It did not deserve great reviews. It was a really ugly, warped, sicko movie. Very dark, 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 dark. And featured Jared Leto playing the Joker. And he was hard to watch, and the film was hard to watch. This is not so much a sequel to that film or even a remake of that film. It's a reboot of the entire franchise because there's a director named James Gunn who's best known for doing Guardian of the Galaxy series. And he really thought he could do a better job with this material from DC Comics. And the fact is, he does. The movie starts out with Viola Davis, great actress, who plays a tough secret agent for some unnamed government agency. And she is in the process of putting together a crew of supervillains, as they're described, people who are being held in custody, who might get some break in their sentence if they do her nefarious secret missions abroad. Listen.
Successfully complete the mission, you get 10 years off your sentence.
We're all gonna die.
I hope so.
Here's the deal. We fail the mission, you die.
If we find out any information you give us is false, you die.
If we find out you have personalized license plates, you die.
What? No.
If you cough without covering your mouth.
Harley, although that isn't an open invitation for you to cough without covering your mouth.
Are you worried? I'm going to get you out of here alive.
I'm going to get you out of here alive.
Okay, that's Idris Elba's voice who you hear there. And he's a very welcome addition to this franchise. And it's also welcome to see back Margot Robbie, who plays Harley Quinn, who appears in a number of DC comic movies. She appeared in the first film. She's much better this time. And everything about the film works better than that previous film. But that doesn't mean it's a pleasure to see. This is a very, very funny movie. It has a sense of humor that it emphasizes rather than simply trying to recreate a dysfunctional nightmare. And the characters are vastly more likable. There was nothing likable about Jared Leto's The Joker. But Bloodsport, which is a character played by Idris Elba, and then the other leading characters, Colonel Rick Flagg, who's played by Joel Kinnaman, and they have John Cena playing the Peacemaker, who's another superhero. And most memorably of all, Sylvester Stallone, or at least the voice of Sylvester Stallone, embodies Giant Shark, who is a walking, somewhat talking shark who can't wait to get num-num, meaning eating somebody. And there are lots of detached limbs. There are lots of exploding heads. There are lots of incredibly bloodthirsty scenes with people sawed in half. And if you're among those who think that that kind of thing can be funny and actually laugh at it, you're going to like this movie a lot. And the plot, however, also has a tinge of anti-American propaganda to it because it shows the United States as engaged in suppressing secret activities abroad that are truly nefarious. Okay, with all of that, I gotta say, I was amused by the giant starfish at the end who looked like a refugee from an old Godzilla-style Japanese horror film. And a giant starfish versus Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, it's kind of attention-getting. 2.5 stars for The Suicide Squad, not to be confused with Suicide Squad of 5 years ago. Of course it's rated R, and it's not for people with weak stomachs. Now, the other big movie that's playing out there already is a Matt Damon movie, which is called Stillwater. And you would have no idea from the title it refers to Stillwater, Oklahoma. Almost all of the film takes place in Marseille in France, because this is a very loose and not very faithful cinema version of the Amanda Knox story, where she was actually condemned to a long sentence for an alleged murder. This film follows the same path, but Matt Damon plays a father who's an unemployed oil rig worker from Oklahoma who goes to Marseille to try to get his innocent daughter, played by Abigail Breslin, out of prison. Listen.
You're the father of the girl, the American student?
Yes, ma'am. Allison came here for college, and that's where she met this girl, Lena. One night she found Lena dead and called the police. All they cared about was Allison sleeping with some Arab girl.
But everybody thinks that I killed her.
We have exhausted every possible legal action.
She's my little girl.
Dad.
I'm not going to give up. You just have to trust me.
Okay, you can trust filmmaker Tom McCarthy, who did Spotlight and actually an Oscar-winning film, remember, about the Boston Globe and exposing the priest pedophile scandals. But this film is extraordinarily long. It goes on and on and on. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes long. And it basically leaves you hanging up until the very end. Is this girl really innocent, and will her father get her out? Now, Matt Damon is excellent. He's playing the kind of American who is a working-class guy from Stillwater, Oklahoma, and he gets the accent right, and he plays a very deeply sympathetic character. But most of the film is about him, and there's very little about the actual central mystery about who done it. Who really murdered this girl, and there's no flashbacks to the murder or anything like that. It's basically about a father and his daughter and their troubled relationship, and they work it out, and they work it out, and they work it out, and you're left with the question, okay, who done it? And by the end of this long movie, you ask, okay, who done it? Who cares? And that's a good thing, because the film is already notorious for its ambivalent ending. You don't know what really happened or what the whole movie was about or what happened to some of the central characters. Atmospheric, yeah, I guess, and some very scenic footage of Marseille. But isn't it strange that a film is called Stillwater when most of it is about Marseille, France, and an American exchange student or an American foreign student who gets into trouble there? And again, there's also in the film a very good new actress named Colleen. And she is actually Camille Cotin, pardon me. And she is actually very fine in the film, better than the film deserves. 2 stars, rated, unrated officially, but should be rated R for the content involving violence and sexuality. We will be back tomorrow with a special program. And part of it has to do with the observance of Hiroshima Day, a program about World War II and some of the myths that need to be corrected about that great conflict, which, of course, was decided largely by this greatest nation on God's green earth.